Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner as we're recording this. It is Tuesday, December 17th, 2013, at just after 3 UTC. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with us again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
And Alex is currently sitting on my back playing with the iPad.
The broken one?
Nah, the new one. Well, we'll talk about that in a little. So let's do our agenda. And as I've done a couple times recently, I'm going to start real quick by just a real quick run through of things we're not going to talk about. We are not going to talk about the Mandela sign language interpreter, although that was really funny. But it became more disturbing as we found out more about the guy's past and how sort of unstable he was, even though he was standing like 4 feet from a whole bunch of world leaders. We're not going to talk about that. We're not going to talk about Google buying a robotics company. We're not going to talk about the Chinese moon rover. We're not going to talk about whether or not Santa Claus is black or white or something else.
We're not going to talk about
that. We're not going to talk about that.
No.
We're not going to talk about Time's choice for Person of the Year, even though they actually picked an actual human being this time, unlike their recent string where they've done all kinds of goofy crap instead.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it for the list of things we're not going to talk about.
Put this on your card.
Put this on my card?
Birthday card.
Oh, on my birthday.
It's good. Okay. Your birthday card.
Okay, now.
Has an iPad on it.
Now, Alex, if you're going to stay here while I record, you have to be quiet, okay? Yeah. Unless you have something to contribute. Okay. So, what we are going to talk about, we had a little bit of feedback this week. I broke my iPad this week. I finally bought that Bitcoin this week, or not a whole Bitcoin. 0.05 bitcoins, to be precise. There was a budget deal.
By the way, are you rich already off the Bitcoin?
No.
Mm.
No.
Damn.
Not rich off the Bitcoin.
Son of a bitch. Okay.
But, you know, I also bought $20 worth of the whatever Mega Millions, whatever it is, that's up to 585 million.
Okay, well, there you go. Well, can I get you here commit on the on the podcast now, that if you win $550 million,
yes.
Can I get a little bit of money? How about, you know?
I'll buy you lunch.
Oh, come on. That's it? That's all I get? 20 years of friendship? Half a billion dollars and I get a lunch?
It could be a really good lunch.
For God's sake.
And of course, there's no doubt that this is going to happen, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so, yeah. We're also going to talk about the NSA, a variety of NSA-related things happened. And finally, and I cannot believe I am saying these words, but we're going to talk about Beyonce.
Yeah, and I'm going to say that he actually surprised me when he actually picked that as one of the he wound up throwing me a toss-up of two subjects, and he picked that one of them was that. So there you go.
There you go. So let me start with the feedback. Okay, we had a feedback. This is from our listener, Matt, who says, subject line Bitcoin, but I think you're onto something with you buying some Bitcoin. Also harkens back to all those mapping apps you tried and gave us your report out on. I think you might be onto a segment called Sam Tries It. And you get to go ahead and try new experimental things and tell us how they work and tell us if they're worth doing. This way you can try it out for us before we go and do it. And you tell us what you think. Like our own little... Alex. And like our own little Sam usability research lab.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea. I'm going to suggest, Sam, I got a great idea. Look, yeah. I want you to test different types of parachutes. Okay?
See, I was about to actually answer that. I thought this was a good idea, too, but there were a few things I was going to exclude.
Oh, God. The exclusions. Okay, such as, for example.
And I was going to exclude.
Firearms.
Well, I was going to exclude new foods.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, God. Okay.
Illegal substances.
Illegal substances.
Okay. Diseases. I don't particularly want to try out new diseases.
No.
And I actually hadn't thought about potentially life-threatening recreational activities. But, you know, that's a good exclusion as well.
Damn it! Son of a... Well, you know this becomes quite boring. Because
you would probably want to have me try to make my own parachute out of sheets or something.
No. I would have you try different commercial grade parachutes. I'm not trying to get you killed. Okay, you know, but you know,
my daughter was actually lobbying to have a spring for her to go skydiving, and I'm like, yeah, no.
There you go. Look, I like this plan. And then your daughter is like pushing into it, you know, going for this. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. So I will actually take serious suggestions that are of Alex, am I going to have to make you go downstairs? Serious suggestions of things that would be interesting for me to try out that, I could give her little reviews of things, just as long as they're not like the categories I mentioned, or for that matter, they're not too expensive unless somebody wants to, you know, spring for it, in which case, you know, I'll try the expensive thing too, but you know.
Well, okay, so I'll give you one thing that maybe you could give a report, because you mentioned this to me one day, and yeah. I actually, you know, honestly, have not done anything on this. You talked about Twitter clients, and you told me stupidly that obviously I went, and I'm say. Like, you talked to me like, I'm using the Twitter say. App. You're like, yeah. What kind of a dumb person does that?
I know, he said stupid. Oh, by the way, I should say we got another piece of feedback from somebody saying they liked the...
I got to talk to you, Fawn. You said stupid, don't say.
I can say stupid. I'm allowed. I'm an adult.
We got another piece of feedback saying that...
No, that's a bad word.
Somebody appreciated the real-time profanity filter.
Stupid for yourself.
Wait a minute, there is a real-time profanity filter?
Yeah, that would be the one who's just yelling at you for saying stupid.
Oh. Okay, all right, well. Okay, good. Anyway, yes.
Anyway, well, yeah, so Twitter clients.
Yes, Twitter clients. You told me that I'm just dumb because I'm just using the straight-out Twitter client, and I'm like, okay, I want to understand the different Twitter clients. And which one is best? How's that?
Okay, so I'll have to prepare something more substantial for next time. But the quick answer is I tried a whole bunch of them, and the general consensus amongst everybody is that at least on small devices, Tweetbot is the best, and I believe they have both iOS and Android clients. I'm not entirely 100% sure about that.
But that's just like right now. I would like a little bit more scientific research. So
okay, Alex, you're gonna No, I was wrong. Tweetbot is not available for Android. It is available for Mac and iOS. But anyway, yeah, I can do a little bit of that. They really proliferated for a while, and there were a whole bunch. But then Twitter has been cracking down and basically indicating that they don't like people building clients, and they put a lot of restrictions on it. So they're trying to steer everybody into their own. And they've put limits on, like, the maximum number of users any one of these alternatives can have.
Interesting. And you see, that's very good to know. I did not know that.
Yeah, so anyway... okay, I have an assignment for next week. I'll try a few additional Twitter apps. Now, I'm restricted. I can try them on Mac, and I can try them on my
iOS,
but I can't review the Android ones. So if anyone out there with Android has some thoughts on Twitter clients for Android, please, you know, jump in and give your thoughts on that. And I will relay them when we record our next show. I'll do that. And if anybody else has any other suggestions that they want me to look into or review or whatever, send them my way. It's abelsmay@abelsmay.com or tweet me at abelsmay, and I'll consider it. I'll consider.
All right. So, okay. All right. So, Sam is going to expand on our consumer reviews. That's fantastic. Wonderful. I love that. Okay. So,
okay. All right. So, now, next was I smashed my iPad.
Yes, he did smash his iPad.
So,
and for all those of you who are not familiar with Sam a very long time, for all the time that I've known Sam, Sam has managed to destroy things in spectacular fashion.
Just to give a, you know, I mentioned this on my website, of course, but I've had this, the iPad I have now, well, you know, minus replacements, was a present last Christmas. So it has been just under a year. I have had to have it replaced twice for smashing the screen.
I mean, I'm like twice. I mean, really, I have an iPad that's 3 years old. Okay. All right. And I still haven't been at the most I've gotten is it's a slight dent on the side. That's it.
So now this time what happened, and I did post this. So those of you who have read this, this is repeating for a little bit, but, I was, you know, Alex was playing with the iPad in the car while we were driving out to dinner. We arrive at the place we were going to go, and the iPad had been low on batteries, so I'd plugged it in the car. And then I get out to pull Alex out of the car seat, and he's holding onto the iPad with both hands, and I'm like, okay, hold on tight, because, you know, I pull him out of the car while he's holding the iPad. He's very good at it. He holds on tight, doesn't get dropped, whatever. But I'd forgotten that I'd plugged the damn thing in. So right. when I pulled him out of the car, the cord was still attached to the iPad. And I, you know, unlike MacBooks, MacBook Pros and all that kind of stuff, iPads don't have MagSafe, which is this little magnetic connector that pops out if you do something like this. So the cord actually yanked the iPad out of Alex's hand because I was pulling him. I was pulling him out. It yanked it out of his hands, so it started to fall. And of course, the cord was there, so it didn't fall straight down. It fell in an arc, smashed against the bottom of the car. And then the cord fell off, and then it smashed onto the pavement below, face down. And so I'm like, uh oh. And I picked it up, and of course it was completely like it was much worse than the smashing it got the first time when I dropped it, like last summer sometime. It had a crack, and it was a bad enough crack that it was like, okay, I need to go get this taken care of. But it wasn't completely smashed. This time it was completely smashed. Like there were little bits of glass like everywhere, you know.
Well, so you've managed to use up in 1 year your two get out of jail cards.
Yeah, basically. Because we paid the extra $50 or whatever when the iPad was bought. That gets you, it includes two replacements for accidental damage, basically. Correct. Over, yes. Like, I think a 2 or 2 year period or something. So yeah. I used those two up in 1 year. It is a nice deal. I mean, like, it's a $50 replacement instead of like a $500 replacement. Yeah, it might maybe not quite 500, but replacing, like, actually, you know, paying full price for the replacement is several hundred bucks.
Yes. It would be quite pricier.
Yeah, okay. It'd be a lot pricier. Not like $50 is nothing, but it's a lot better than $300, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, we did take it in for that. We did replace it. The one thing that ticked me off, no end, and I tweeted a little bit about this too, is I made sure to do a full backup to my iMac. And yeah. I did the encrypted backup specifically so like because the regular backup doesn't store passwords and stuff. So you have to re-sign in to everything that you have to sign into. And that's kind of a pain in the ass. So I specifically did the encrypted backup to my iMac. So that I wouldn't have to worry about all that. So that theoretically, I would restore it, and it would be exactly like I left it. Period. Yeah. End of story. Exactly.
And it didn't happen.
It didn't. Like now, the passwords and stuff. That stuff worked, but it only restored about half of my apps.
You know, I noticed that. Well, yeah, and then it started downloading them again.
After it downloaded, the only half were there.
Like, you know what? That I had that problem happen to me before, and I had to go and like just delete the restore and like start it and do it again.
Well, right. So I reinstalled it. I tried reinstalling it from the backup a couple times.
Didn't. No go.
No go. It got exactly the same result. Exactly the same apps were the same ones were missing.
Oh, that's irritating. Oh, that's irritating.
And then I'm like, okay, well, you know what the hell? I'll restore from the iCloud backup instead. Right. But guess what? It had already rebacked up.
Oh, boy.
So I'm like, that won't do me any good. So, you know, and luckily, no data that was
Was lost. It's just it wouldn't put your apps back the way that they were, basically.
Yeah, I didn't have any pictures missing or anything I couldn't replace. There was nothing I couldn't replace missing. But it meant that I have to reinstall a ton of apps. Now, and I didn't even reinstall everything. I reinstalled a few things, and then I'm like, ah, screw it. I'll reinstall the others when I feel like it, you know? But it was annoying, because this is supposed to just work, and it didn't. And that always pisses the hell out of me. Especially,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, actually, I remember, actually, the problem I had with my backup the last time that I was, when I was restoring to my phone, was actually that, damn it, I got a call. I got calls while I was restoring it. And the restore got interrupted. And it got so messed up that I had to just wipe the damn phone and just start it again.
Well, and I thought that was what happened, because I did get an error while I was interrupting about, like, there was some movie that I'd copied from my wife to my account, and it needed to be reauthorized or something. So it interrupted it, and I'm like, okay, maybe that's it. So I reauthorized the stupid movie, and then did the restore again, but it made no difference.
Okay. All right, so basically, but you've got it back. You've burned through two things.
And so next summer when I drop it again, I'm screwed.
Okay. Yep. You're well, not screwed. It's just basically
will have to pay more.
Yes.
But I now know. I'm now calibrated. I should just expect an iPad lasts 6 months.
Yeah, that's barely your time. Well, now think about it. With your extended warranty, basically, you know, say it's going to be another 6 months. So at least you'll get 18 months.
Yep.
So basically your life cycle's 18-month replacement.
Yeah, there
Apple's
you go.
Apple's going to love you.
And then, at the end of that time period, I still have to determine if I smashed a screen again, do I just pay for the refurbished one of the same model and you know, get it quote-unquote repaired, even though they hand you a refurb? Or do I just say, perfect opportunity to get the current one?
I would say I would buy a brand new one every 18 months. What the heck, anyway? Yeah, what the hell?
Yeah, I was thinking a 2-year replacement cycle on the thing, but you know, 18 months, you're pretty close.
It's close. I mean, I'm not, you know, yeah, I'm not saying, you know, once every 6 months.
But
you know,
I'd much rather, you know, be able to wait for like right now. We had the one major update to the iPad Air since I bought mine.
Yeah.
I would much rather wait until the next major update rather than just get whatever's current when I break it.
I can understand that, but that, you know, you do understand that could mean that you're without a working device for a while, depending on when it happens.
Or I get it repaired and then still get a new one when the new one comes out.
Oh, there you go. Well, that costs
more though. But
I've heard that. Yeah. I don't know. Something tells me that may cost more. I'm not sure why.
Anyway, enough about that. Then the other little thing to update is Matt and his feedback mentioned Bitcoin. I did, in fact, go ahead and buy it. I mentioned last week that I signed up with Coinbase. I did not take advantage of the thing where you give your bank passwords and be able to buy and sell instantly and immediately and have it there. Instead, I did the thing where they deposited a few cents into my account, and I typed that in to verify. So that took a few days.
Yeah, that's better.
I also didn't. I tried to do the thing where I could verify it so that once I bought it, it would show up in my account immediately without sort of a settling period. But something wasn't working with it on me. Like you have to put in your credit card number or whatever, and no matter which card you put in, like I tried a couple of my cards. I tried my debit card, but I expected that that wouldn't work. I tried a credit card too. That didn't work. And I verified, you know, both of these cards are in good standing. There were no issues there, blah, blah, blah. And it just wasn't accepting it. So I'm like, I don't know, whatever. So I did the thing where you purchase it and it takes a few days for it to settle, but you get it at a price that you know, just like stocks usually are, you know, it takes a couple days for it to settle.
Okay. So the question again, since I asked about 30 minutes ago, maybe this changed. Are you still rich? Are you not rich from the Bitcoin?
So let's put it this way. I got it. It was just about $50 worth. So it was just under $1,000 when I bought it. It was like $950, $960 or something like that.
And now?
$663.
So you've lost. Wait a minute. So how much was it when you bought it?
I bought about $50 worth, a few cents. No, less
but than what was the quote on the Bitcoin when you bought it?
$950 or something.
$950, and now you're down to $663.
Yeah, something like that.
$663. So you're down $287 on $950. So you're down 33%. So you've lost a grand total out of your fifth. How much was it? $50.
$50.
$50. You've lost a total of $16.88 already. I don't think you're on track to get rich, Sam.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you got to think the long term here, right? I mean, I'm accepting of the idea that it may take me up to 2 or 3 weeks to be a millionaire.
Yeah. Right now, you're not doing too well on that count. I think that lottery ticket may be working out a little bit better at this point. But we'll see. I mean, who knows? I mean, this thing, you know, could go crazy. You imagine they go, I don't know, what if they go to 10,000, 100,000? So 100, if you've got, you got 0.5, how much, what's the percentage?
0.05 Bitcoins. So
if
like
you got
0.05
Bitcoin and it goes to, say, I don't know, $100,000, you still only get $5,000. It's not really good. Yeah, shit. Well, all right. Well, I don't know. Too bad. I can't get you rich off the damn Bitcoin. Maybe. Who knows?
It just has to go up more than that.
I guess so. Maybe 10 million. Who knows? Anyway.
Yeah, so
all right.
My current, I bought it at, I was just trying to check my history here. Where's my history? You purchased.
So bottom line, it was a very complicated process for you to get.
It wasn't that. Okay, I bought my 0.05 Bitcoins for $49.32. Like I said, about $50. It is now $33.01.
Okay.
Yeah. So no, and look, once I did Coinbase. And, you know, Bruce mentioned this on Twitter, like all the complicated stuff was when I was trying to use Mt. Gox. So, that was a mess. Once I used Coinbase, I was up and running in a few minutes.
So let me ask you a question. Why is Mt. Gox so complicated? Just because it's offshore?
I think that's probably part of it. I mean, it's Japanese based, and so there was all this wire transfer crap. Coinbase is clearly built for the U.S. market. It was really easy to hook it to my my checking account. And it was my choice to wait a couple days because I didn't want to give them the password. I could have been up and running much faster if I didn't. I think that's it. I mean, when I looked around, Coinbase is clearly the one that's most popular in the U.S. And it worked. Oh, and by the way, since it's down to 648 since I talked about it a few minutes ago.
Well, now it says over here last 690. I'm on Mt. Gox.
Yeah, well, see, I'm at Coinbase's buy price, and
last
699.14.
There you go, low 678.
Yeah, there's still enough. the volume is still low enough that there's a gap between the bid and the ask, and depending on where you go, you get different prices. So you know, whatever.
Well, okay, so, all right, so you got a Bitcoin, okay?
I got 0.05, I got a bit nickel. I don't know what they're really called.
I got a bit nickel. And basically, if you want to do it easy, go to Coinbase.
Yeah, and, you know, and of course I could, you know, it would be, if you were doing more substantial volumes, it would be, you know, more substantial, but... Yeah, and right now you're right. The price at Mt. Gox is better than the price at Coinbase at this very minute. But what? Yeah, whatever. I suppose you could play some arbitrage games here too.
Yeah, you probably could.
Yeah,
that would be interesting. There you go. Yeah, that's something to think about.
Anyway, enough with those little updates. We'll take a break and we'll be back with the budget deal, NSA, and Beyonce. Back after this.
Ready for the test, Dracula?
I'm ready, Frankenstein. Then let us begin.
Creepy Classic celebrates the classic horror and science fiction films from the silent era through the 1960s, and retro TV horror from the 1950s to the 1970s. Visit creepyclassics.com for all your classic video needs. And when you buy something, tell Ron that the curmudgeons say hello.
Okay, here we are.
Here we are.
Budget deal. And you know, Yvonne and I were talking before we started this, you know, about our topics. And I'd come up with a long list of topics. Most of the ones I said we weren't going to talk about were on my list. And then, you know, I ask Yvonne for his list, and he's like, the budget deal. And I'm like, oh, yeah.
Well,
I'd read a few things about it when it first happened, but I'd completely spaced on it. It was like...
Well, I mean, here's the thing about the budget deal, right? So we spent so much time the last, I don't know, how long, basically going from crisis to crisis, right? Okay, just going from one after the other. It was just, you know... Every few months, it was just a mess. The financial markets were going crazy. You know, we got a credit downgrade out of all this nonsense, right? Okay, and then so we heard the last budget deal, and you and I were talking about after the shutdown, and we were just saying, you know what? They just set us up for another shutdown, or at least that's what it seemed. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, they negotiated one and they passed it, and they didn't just pass it. It passed with overwhelming numbers.
Right.
I mean, it was like only like 90 people against in the House on the deal. And I mean, Bonner proceeded to just right afterwards, just basically tell the Tea Partiers to go screw themselves. That he was fed up with the whole thing and that he was just, you know,
he was done.
He was done. And I was just, honestly, just quite a little bit shocked that it just happened that quickly.
Well, it's also interesting, of course, that Paul Ryan of, you know, the famous Ryan budget and such.
Yeah, he was leading the negotiations that actually led to a compromise.
Now, it is important to point. I'm sorry, Alex. I'm sorry. One important thing to note, though, is that the deal we're at right now is actually more is a tighter budget deal than what Ryan's budget was back then. All the talk was about how Ryan's budget was so. Excuse me, I'll be right back. I have to take care of someone who's really upset about their train game. Back in just a second. I'm back.
Okay, so you were saying.
What I was saying before I was interrupted is that the new budget deal is actually a thriftier, tighter bill than Ryan's bill a couple years back, which at the time everybody was like, you know, that's so unrealistic. The cuts are way too big. It'll cause all kinds of problems.
Well.
And then we had the sequester.
Wait. But yes. But they didn't touch anything related to entitlements. Okay, right. All right? They did not touch Social Security, did not touch Medicare, because that was the big thing, really, that got most people about the Ryan budget really up in arms, okay, was the way that he wanted to balance that piece.
Right, and it wasn't just the total amount. It was how he wanted to
do it. Right, exactly. And, you know, because – and so, I mean, they included some taxes and some fees.
And one thing that's interesting here, though, I should say, is that, you know, we're also, just compared to the sequester, most of the sequester is actually staying in place. Most of the cuts are staying in place. What they are doing is more fixes, again, to rearrange what does get the money and what doesn't, and give money back to certain things and that kind of thing. And there are also, interestingly enough, there are some new revenues here.
Correct.
Now, yes. There are new – the Republicans can make themselves feel better by saying they're not taxes. They're fees or something.
But they're fucking taxes. Okay. All right. Yeah. Get over it. They did add some taxes. Yes. I mean, it wasn't but the bottom line is that somehow, all of a sudden, out of the blue, they were able to cut a deal. And, oh, by the way, less than 2 months. I mean, you know, I was just a little bit, like, shocked that they were able to actually do it in such a quick time. And it's,
well,
you know.
And I think the difference is clear. I mean, it's because that last round went so badly in terms of PR for the Republicans. Because they didn't come out like, you know, hey, we're the noble ones trying to do something, blah, blah, blah. You know. Public opinion of the Republican Party plummeted.
And not just that. The worst thing is that they could have had a field day during that whole time with Obamacare. Okay, all right. And they could have been scoring like a bazillion points.
And
instead,
they were
like basically screwing themselves on this whole other losing deal.
And I think that's part of the calculation here, too, is they expect Obamacare to continue to have problems over the next couple months. So they want to be able to spend time hammering on it and focusing on that rather than, hey, guess what? It's January. We're going to be in another shutdown fight.
Right. That's what the calculation seems to me as well.
Now there's been a deal on the budget. We do not yet have a deal on the debt limit, so there's still opportunity.
Yeah,
for this.
I know there could be some shenanigans with that, but I don't expect.
I think the will is gone. I mean, I think there's certainly like some elements of the Republican Party who still want to do that, but the leadership has clearly said. We tried that. It didn't work. It actually hurt us. We're not going to do it again.
Right. They've backed off the cliff and it's done. It just seems like unless there's some massive change in the next election in the Republican leadership, I'm saying this tactic is buried at least for a while.
Well, and there certainly are some questions about what the next election will do. Do we get more or less? Of the radicals who like the shutdown tactics and things like that. And I don't know. Because for the most part, that question doesn't apply in competitive districts. I mean, in competitive districts that are actually could go either way, Republican, Democrat, you tend to get the more moderate Republicans and the more moderate Democrats as the contenders.
Right.
The place where this happens is places where it's a safe Republican seat. And so then the real battle is in the Republican primary, and the primary voters are much more dedicated and ideological than general election voters. And so it's very possible that you'll get more of these type of folks in there. We'll see. I think it's, I don't have a good read on the 2014 elections yet. We'll be hearing lots more about that over the next, you know, what, 11 and a half months? 10 and a half months.
No, 11. 11, no.
11 would go to the end of November. So, the election's in the beginning of November.
Right. I mean,
so.
Right. 10 and a half months.
There you go.
Okay.
This is why I was a physics major. Right there.
Oh, yes. Oh, wow. Jeez. Yes, it was so helpful.
You and your little business degrees, you can't understand the calendar.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for gracing us with your physical intelligence.
Is that what they call it?
Yes.
Anyway, so it's interesting how the dynamic has changed. And I think what you're going to see, the strategy for 2014 is at this point going to be basically, you know, hammering on Obamacare and any continued failures it might have. And you know they're crossing their fingers, hoping that it fails a lot more. I try to forget about this budget thing for the most part. You know,
well, I mean, it's like what you said before, they had gotten like 80% of the stuff they wanted, for God's sakes, in the budget, which is the one thing why this whole thing was so crazy.
It's like, okay, declare victory and go home.
Right. I mean, God, for the love of God, I mean, you know, you're trying to acquire complete capitulation and you've gotten like 80% of what you wanted. What the hell's the matter with you, man? You know,
and look, they're in line to get even more of what they want going forward. And they only hurt themselves by overreaching and trying to get to sort of their ideal solution in one step, as opposed to saying, this is the whole, you know, compromise versus ideological purity thing.
Right.
Like, okay, yeah, maybe the goal you want is over there and it has all this stuff, but what's being put on the table may not get you all the way there, but it moves you in that direction. Say yes.
Exactly.
And then fight for the next little bit, and then say yes, and then fight for the next little bit, and you can ratchet it up and move in the direction you want to go. But when you start fighting for it's all or nothing, you're much more likely to end up with nothing.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And I think the same thing, you know, the Democrats have the same kind of lesson. The health care plan's not what they wanted. Obamacare is not what liberal Democrats wanted by any stretch of the imagination.
Not even remotely close, no.
But no, it moved things in the direction they wanted. And right. So they're like, we'll take it. You know? And I think that's a fundamental principle of a lot of political actions, is that you have to recognize when you're winning and say yes and declare victory and be happy about it.
Yeah, I know.
And because, you know, fundamentally, the more fiscal conservative viewpoint has been winning for a while now. Well, let's put it in, one of the interesting parts of this is, when does the fiscally conservative viewpoint actually win? Under the damn Democratic presidents.
Right.
You know?
Yes. Because under the Republicans, we've just been like burning money like no tomorrow.
You know, Clinton balanced the damn budget. The Obama's reduced the deficit more than any president since, you know. And meanwhile, who explodes the deficit and the debt? Bush. You know, and so, yeah, so recent history, and you can see these charts going back like all the way to FDR on this kind of
Reagan
stuff.
I mean, Jesus, Reagan was, you know, he freaking like Reagan and you know, he freaking burning through money like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, I mean, you can see charts that map this going back all the way to FDR, and the trend is remarkably consistent that despite all the rhetoric, The Democratic administrations have been more fiscally conservative than the Republican administrations because the Republicans have had other priorities. And you can definitely see that. I mean, Reagan, Bush, they all wanted to spend on defense.
Right.
And they of course would justify that that's the right thing to do, but it's certainly not fiscally conservative.
No, it's not.
Okay. And with that, okay, bye, Alex. Okay.
Now, with that,
anything else to say on the budget, or are we ready for a break?
No. We can take a break.
We'll take a break, and we'll be back and talk about NSA some. Back after this. Okay. If my young child will leave us alone, then we'll have another segment. NSA.
Okay.
Okay. So wait. He is not. So I'm going to take him downstairs for a second, right, and then we'll get started for real.
Go.
Okay, Alex. Come on. Go downstairs.
Okay. All right. So.
Okay. Now I'm back for real. I have, you know, taken him once again down to his mother. We'll see how this works out. Okay, so NSA. So there are a couple of NSA things since we last talked. One was one of the newer revelations that came out this week was that I think it was after our last show. Time just all flows together. Is that NSA had been specifically using Google's tracking cookies as a way to identify and track people throughout the internet by essentially intercepting Google's cookies and recognizing that a specific Google cookie belonged to a specific person, and then monitor, you know, what they're doing on the internet through identifying them through that cookie. Which of course pissed off Google even more than they were already pissed off. And of course it brings up that, you know, they may have been using Google's cause it's the most prominent, but there are all kinds of others. I mean, you see these things like you can go to, there are plugins you can install or there are sites you can go to that basically show you, you know, when you go to a website, just how many bugs and trackers and things are on there. And for most major companies that whose websites you go to, it's dozens. And they follow you around and they can, you know, and it's different advertising companies tracking you and the website themselves tracking you and analytics companies tracking you and this and that and this and that. And so there's all kinds of identifying things that are out there. So yet another thing, but you know, it's just the march continues of these, dribs and drabs of information about exactly what NSA is doing and how they were doing it. And I don't know. I as it continues, I'm of course less, it's like, okay, there's nothing particularly new and shocking about this. If you don't already get the idea by this point, that the bottom line is their whole modus operandi is monitor absolutely everything it's humanly possible to monitor and then sift through it later and figure out what's interesting, then you haven't been paying attention.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. But and, you know, on that note, the biggest thing that happened today is
the new court ruling.
That's right.
So an appeals court judge, a federal appeals court judge, ruled the phone records collection that the NSA had been doing, which was one of the first things that was revealed here, is unconstitutional under the Fourth Amendment. And basically, he put in place an order that it needed to stop, but then he immediately stayed the order pending appeals. And this is when all this thing was initially breaking. One of the things we said is, you know, there's the argument that all of this violates the Fourth Amendment, regardless of whether there was a law that authorized or whatever, it violates the Fourth Amendment on a fundamental basis. And one of the things I said is, maybe, I certainly think it feels that way. The ACLU certainly feels that way. But so far, whenever these kinds of issues have come before the courts, they've tended to defer to the executive. One, a lot of these things didn't come to the court at all because they said there was no standing because you couldn't prove that the NSA was listening to you. So how do you prove there's any damage? How do you have standing? And they threw out a bunch of cases along those lines. Well, the Snowden revelations mean that, well, now you have that proof, essentially.
Right.
So now you can sort of more reliably say you have standing. But then a lot of these other cases were thrown out due to deference to the executive, due to the executive pulling the national security card through various different mechanisms, etc. And so the courts historically have not been ruling in a way that was very friendly to an expansive view of the Fourth Amendment, let's say. They were reading the Fourth Amendment incredibly narrowly. So this judge has not. But, you know, this is going to go to the Supreme Court. I think there's no doubt this is going to end up in the Supreme Court. And I'm not sure where the Supreme Court stands on this.
I'm not sure either. I got to agree. I'm not sure what their final ruling is going to be.
Because you've got an interesting mix on the Supreme Court. This is one of the issues that doesn't end up neatly along liberal conservative lines.
No, I mean, it doesn't.
The judge who made this ruling right here today was appointed by George W. Bush.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why I am like, you know, this thing may be thrown out, which I guess my question that I keep thinking is, why hasn't there been, I mean, is it me? Had there been any challenges before that just had not gotten anywhere with this?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There have been tons of challenges. And like I said, they've all ended up, many of them were just thrown out for lack of standing. There were a number that were blocked by the administration saying that they weren't going to provide evidence because it was state security. And then there have been other cases where the courts have just sort of said that, you know, we have to give deference to the executive on a security issue. There have been a variety of cases, and I certainly couldn't rattle them off. I don't know them. I'm not a lawyer. But I know that these have been in the court before. The difference is that the context that's been created by the Snowden revelations means, for the first time, really, the judges involved, and this particular judge, have real information to go on.
Right.
That says something other than the government just saying, sorry, this is a national security concern. Trust us, we're doing the right thing.
Right.
And I guess he also got a sympathetic judge. I mean, I have not read the whole opinion. I've just followed on Twitter a few quotes here and there from this judge, and he was this was an unequivocal ruling. He was saying like James Madison would be rolling in his grave. I mean, he didn't use quite those words, but you know he said this is there were a whole bunch of different quotes about how much. He was saying that this is going overboard, this is unacceptable, this is that. This was not an opinion that pulled punches, or thought that this was a subtle issue. This opinion was like, this is clearly a violation, no question about it. And again, you will have to see what happens when we get to the court. And, Declan McCullough from CNET, who Yvonne and I knew personally from college, was commenting on this earlier as well, that, you know, part of this depends by the time it actually gets to the Supreme Court, what is the political environment around this issue anymore? Does anybody give a shit anymore?
I got to tell you something. Look, the public, let's face it, like I've said before, the public isn't looking at.
Well, and okay? Here's the thing. Like everyone always says, you know, theoretically, you know, the court is supposed to be above such things. But in reality, the Supreme Court does read the papers. The Supreme Court does look at public opinion. Absolutely. And the point that Declan was making is the court doesn't like to get very far ahead of public opinion, at least the current court. So they'll like do gay marriage after the majority of the public is already on board. They weren't going to lead on that issue years earlier.
I think here's the thing about it. There's two differences between public opinion versus, you know, are people passionate about it?
Right.
Okay. All right. And that's the difference. I think if you ask people, and obviously, like everything, it's like, you know, one of the arguments I got with some people depends how you ask the damn question, too.
Yeah.
All right. You know, are you interested in America defending your security and using any measures possible? You know, because I love that question. Yes. Oh, yes, of course. Absolutely. And I'm like, you know, but then you say, hey, are you okay with a government picking up every information, every phone call and every email and every communication you've ever had? Oh, shit. No. I'm like, well, you know what? It's why I said with all these polls, depends on how you frame the question. I think that people, if you ask a question like I mentioned, listen, people are uncomfortable with the government getting a hold of all that information. Okay, and that much information. Now, on the other hand, you ask a question on the other way, and people are always like, yeah, yeah, security, security, yeah. So, you know, I think the court is, in terms of gauging the public opinion, is going to have a tough time really understanding. I mean, getting a sense of that, because I think that most people have not really delved into it enough to make a good informed decision on what they really feel about this. Okay, I mean, I think you and I have, I mean, I personally have been on the side of, like, I've always been against all of this because I've never liked giving the government this much power to harness that much information, because, like I said, you could always, you don't have either have enough protocols behind it, it can be abused, it's just not right. Okay, if you're going to be investigating something, you got to have probable cause, you got to know what you're looking at, and you got to get a court to authorize you to be able to gather that information. That's my position. Boom. End of discussion. Anything else you do outside my perspective, unconstitutional. I don't think I have the majority opinion, simply because I don't think people have analyzed it enough to give a shit or understand what the hell we're talking about. Now, a lot of people have looked at it because of all these revelations. But even still, I don't think they've looked at it deep enough.
Well, and again, the question, if it ends up in the Supreme Court, it's going to end up being, you know, those particular justices and what are their current thoughts on this issue. And like I said, it doesn't line neatly up on, you know, Republican-Democrat lines.
Not at all.
As we saw in the Congress when they were voting on the Amash Amendment, you know, where they quite nearly got a majority to shut down a lot of this stuff in the House. Which was, you know, it was completely split both parties in half, essentially.
Yeah.
And you may see a similar weird split in the Supreme Court.
And that's right.
I wish, you know, I am not a Supreme Court watcher. I can't rattle off the justices and tell you where they tend to fall on civil liberties issues of this sort. But it's something to start paying attention to and reading up on. And certainly, you know, if we lose any justices between now and whenever this gets to the courts, you know, it's going to be important in their confirmation. You know, because of course, Obama is going to try to nominate somebody who's supportive of all the surveillance stuff.
You know what? I don't know.
You don't think so?
I'm not going to make that blanket assertion. I got to be honest with you.
Well, I just,
there's a couple
I
of things just, in play. There's a couple of things at play here. There's,
I just
there's
look
one
at
thing.
The little committee that he set up, which, by the way, also has reported its findings to the president and will be public in another month or so. And what I suspect will happen out of that, just given the type of people he appointed to that, is that there will be recommendations for some changes, but they'll be mostly cosmetic. And there will also be things to, you know, where they find that there were things that were marginally legal, the recommendation will be to pass new laws to make it legal rather than to stop doing it. That, I mean, and I could be wrong. I might be pleasantly surprised and this committee comes out saying, hey, this is completely out of control. We have to, like, revamp huge portions of it and stop much of what's being done. I just don't think that's going to be what comes out of it. Do-do-do. Hey, this is Sam from the future. We obviously recorded this before the committee released their results, which actually happened a lot earlier than it was anticipated. They just sent it to the president, and it was anticipated it would be released about a month later. But hey, it was released later in the week. And guess what? Unlike what I just said, they were a little bit more aggressive in saying that certain things had gone too far and should be shut down, etc. I think they probably still didn't go far enough, but it was certainly more aggressive than a lot of people, including myself, obviously, from what you just heard, anticipated. Yvonne and I will probably talk about that more next week. In any case, I was going to say bye for now, but no, just back to the regular show. Here you go. Do-do-do.
I think the thing that I was, you know, look, there's a different thing between you coming into a situation and having certain powers that were already given to you versus you going and grabbing those powers. Okay? Mm. Two different things. I mean,
but it's also, you know, very different giving them up once you have them.
Agreed. Totally agree. But the one thing is about it is that when you have philosophy in terms of, like, selecting judges, okay, and who you're going for the court, it's kind of, like, tough to, if you are ideologically in one way, to go and like try to slant that. It's like, yes, I'm ideological that way, but I want a guy who's going to defend this. You know, then you wind up making all sorts of crazy stuff. I, you know what? I don't think that he would purposely do that, because in order to try to pick a judge in the vein that you're talking about, I mean, it really probably would eliminate a lot of people that they would normally consider.
I don't know. I think it's fairly easy to find liberals who nevertheless are fairly strongly... I mean, you just have to look at the Congress.
Really?
You know, there's...
look
at the Congress. There are plenty of Democrats who are fairly liberal on all kinds of issues, but are completely behind, hey, we're doing the right thing with this surveillance. Because it's what we need to do to keep safe.
You know what? I don't know if they're really all that gung-ho about it more than they are just trying to back the president. Because he's a Democrat.
I'm sure you have some of that. But
I think you have a substantial amount of that, to be honest with you. I that's why, you know, to me, well, here's the thing. What we're proving right now, while trying to nuance this, it's very tough to gauge exactly what the hell's going to happen with
right.
it. You know, there's just way too much. I mean, I don't, you know, like you said, listen, the Supreme Court's, this really divides opinions in very strange ways. It makes very interesting bedfellows in terms of the alliances on it.
Right.
What the heck it happens when it gets to the Supreme Court? You know, it's a great question.
And it'll be a while. I mean, yeah. these things, it'll be like another year before this makes it there. I don't see the, given the nature of the ruling, I don't see the Supreme Court saying, no, we don't want to hear it. They're going to hear it. And then we'll see what happens.
Right.
I mean, and frankly, this is the kind of thing that should end up at the Supreme Court.
I agree.
And if anything, it's a shame it didn't get there already because of all the bullshit about standing and other things like that. And not to say that standing is a completely bullshit concept. I think the way it was applied in these type of cases, where essentially there was no possible human being who could have standing under the...
Yeah, that to me never makes any sense. They said, well, you don't have standing. And then you ask, who does? Nobody? No. That's bullshit. That's impossible. Somebody's got to have to.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the NSA stuff. I think it's a very interesting turn in the course of this to see, because this is the first major defeat to any of these things in a while, and certainly since the Snowden revelations. But who knows where it's going to end up in the courts. I also found it incredibly interesting that this was a George W. Bush judge and not, say, a Clinton judge that gave this ruling.
Well, but like we said, main reason is because, you know what, this is an issue that really divides people in really strange ways. That's the reality.
Yep. Okay, let's take a break. Beyonce? Is that what we're going to talk? We're really going to talk about Beyonce. Okay.
Yes, we are.
We will be right back talking about this thing. Back after this.
AfricaFocus.org features high-quality analysis and progressive advocacy on African issues with a particular attention to priority issues affecting the entire continent. The heart of the website is the Africa Focus Bulletin. Other features include regularly updated Africa-related news feeds and a set of country pages with extensive background and links on each African country. If you follow African issues or are even curious, visit AfricaFocus.org today.
Okay, here we go. Beyonce. So all the excitement was basic. For those of you who've been living under a cave,
A
rock?
Something
like that. What happened was all of a sudden, Beyonce posts from her Twitter account, and I guess a bunch of other celebrities who are, you know, in the know with Beyonce, posted an announcement. Hey, my new album is now available on iTunes. No other advance warning, no nothing. Just boom, it's on iTunes. And it's an iTunes exclusive. It's not available in stores. It's not available on streaming. It wasn't on the radio yet. Nothing. And also, it was not the singles were not being made available. It was purchase the whole album or not.
Album. That's right.
And of course this blew up. And, you know, when Yvonne was talking to me about this before the show, he introduced this as, she put it out with no publicity. Well, of course.
And I used the wrong term. None of the traditional publicity.
There wasn't a, hey, we're going to be releasing an album in 2 weeks, and here's a single, and here's another single, and here's another single, and we've got advertising in all the places, and we've got stuff on the radio. None of that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you've got millions of Twitter followers who are your dedicated fans, and you tweet, hey, my new album's out, and then, by the way, you're the first major person doing an iTunes-only release like this. I mean, other people have done it, but nobody at her stature.
Yeah.
Guess what? You've got all kinds of free media because everybody's talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, this thing just exploded. I mean, I was, like, reading the numbers. I mean, she managed to sell, like, almost 1 million albums, you know, in the first, 48
hours.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the hell lately has sold 1 million albums of anything.
Well, albums,
not single downloads.
Right.
Albums, full albums.
I'm sure there have been a few things, but it takes longer than that usually. It takes longer.
Not in three days.
No, not in three days. So there are a number of interesting things. I will also say though, she was not releasing this, you know, as an independent person. She was still releasing it through her record label.
Right.
So it's not like complete, you know, like some people were talking about this as disintermediation of another thing where she could go direct to her fans. She's still not quite there, but it shows that this is, you know, it's certainly possible. It's certainly once you've got the big kind of name like this,
right,
you don't need Jack. You can record something in your home studio.
Yeah.
Produce it yourself.
Yep.
Upload it yourself using one of any number of dozens of services to get it on iTunes. And if you're a big name like that, you can probably go direct to iTunes too without any of those things. And tweet out, "Hey, it's here." And you pull in your 30% or whatever it is of the revenue without anybody in between. But that's not quite what she did. But you know what it does show is, first of all, you mentioned everybody buys individual songs now. Since when?
Right.
You know, it's been a long time since most people bought albums.
Right.
But you know, she forced, you know, it's the whole thing or nothing, and tons of people did it anyway because they're for her fans. They're excited. Another thing that people have pointed out is this isn't she's not particularly looking to, you know, she doesn't need to get a whole bunch of new fans.
Right.
She gets all the people who already like her stuff to buy it. She's already made a pretty dollar right there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if there are any new people, that's a bonus.
Well, let me put it to you this way. She's got me almost at a point that for...
You want to buy it just to see.
Yes. That's, you know what? This is the genius of this whole thing. I've almost bought the... I haven't. But I've been like this close to hitting the damn buy button.
Just to see what all the fuss is about,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I haven't actually heard anybody say whether it's any good or not. Like,
actually, I know. I've heard a lot of people say it's great.
Oh, okay.
Now, I don't know if those people have the same taste as I do, but I'll tell you this. I went into the ratings, for example, on iTunes. Okay, there's like 19,000 ratings. Of the 19,000, 16,270 are 5 stars.
Well, and this is another thing. I mean, she's going after her fans first.
Right.
I mean, who are the people who are going in and rating and buying? It's the people who are, you know, so excited that they'll buy something new from her sight unseen without ever having heard it.
Agreed.
Another innovation. These all compared with videos. Like when you buy it, it's the music plus the video.
Plus a video. Yes. It all has videos for every song. Yes. Which is kind of cool. I mean, I saw some of it. It looked cool. I mean, but I've been like, geez, the thing is, I'm not a Beyonce fan, and I'm like, $16? I mean, but believe me, she's gotten me close to clicking the damn button. Okay? She has me tantalized, but I've been like,
And I will say, hearkening back to our first segment, I am not going to be the guinea pig to buy the Beyonce album and listen to it and review it next week.
Oh, man. Oh, well.
That Yvonne is much more up your alley. I think you should buy it.
Yeah, but what the hell am I going to say about it, really? Yeah, my review. It's good. It's bad. It sucks. Yeah, not exactly like a very in-depth review we could expect.
Yeah, but all this points to, again, in, you know, everybody's like, the death of the music industry and how digital music has hurt it, etc. You know, it really should be looked at as a huge opportunity to do things in new and different ways that haven't been done in the last 40 years.
Agreed.
One example of it. And there are other artists who are releasing their stuff directly to the public without intermediaries, like I said. You've got people like Jonathan Colton, who, you know, has a very niche audience. He does sort of geek music, but he never could have. I've listened to interviews with him where he's like, you know, under the old sort of studio record company system, I never could have like made a living at this because right. I wasn't ever going to be the star that's selling out huge stadiums.
Right.
But, you know, I make some stuff that a dedicated number of people really like, and they'll buy my stuff when I put it out. And because I can now go direct to them and do this kind of stuff, I was able to quit my day job and I'm a professional musician now, you know, and he may not be, you know, a multimillionaire because of it, but he's making a living. And I think, you know, you see a lot more ability to get these sort of, more niche things out there. And then you also have for these big guys, like Beyonce, and who was it that did it the other year? Radiohead. Radiohead put out their album last year, I think it was last year, where they just put it out and said, pay whatever you feel like. If you want to download it for free, okay, download it for free.
Yeah, but I remember
But pay whatever you feel like. And, you know, they made a... And they did it direct. No record company, no nothing. You were paying them. They made a decent amount of money. You know, and they were big enough that they could succeed at that. So you've got a lot of interesting new models that are potentially available. And we're talking about music right now. It's certainly already been shown in print with books, the sort of print-on-demand and direct-to-ebook stuff. There have been a number of cases now of authors who, you know, had absolutely nothing, but hey, I wrote my book and I uploaded it and I put it on sale and it took off for whatever reason, and they were able to quit their day jobs and make their money off of their books too. Now, it's certainly by
now. And now, of course, we have been hoping for a very, very long time that a lot of you would just send us tons of money. Okay, somehow.
For the podcast.
Yeah. For the podcast, you know, and we just quit our jobs and this is all we do every week.
I should mention that way back like 5 years ago or whenever the first Kindle came out, I did make my blog, abelsmay.com, available on Kindle for, I think it's a buck a month subscription or something
like and?
That. I have zero subscribers. I didn't even subscribe to it myself.
Oh gosh!
Because frankly, that makes no sense. I can't even imagine like actually reading my blog that way. But you know, hey, I did it just to show I could. And the point was that I could, as an individual, write something, go somewhere, and with a few clicks, make it available to the world for a fee. Now, in order to be like I mentioned, there are a few like people who've done their self-published ebooks and made millions. But that is, of course, the unusual exception. Most people who do that will sell no copies whatsoever or will sell a handful to their family and friends and not, you know, recoup their initial investment in the effort. But it makes all of these additional options available in music, in print. I think you're going to start, I mean, and I guess to some degree, YouTube is already an example of doing that with video, but you're going to see more examples of that where you get your sort of homegrown web video series that end up catching on and people like and will be willing to pay for either directly or through advertisements. You're going to see these kinds of models popping up in a way that, you know, has really not been possible before, because in order to get anything out there, you had to get the record deal, or you had to get the big publisher with the advance and all this kind of stuff. And
so if any of you that are listening feel the urge to pay us like $50,000 a month.
Yeah, you know that joke
for
is
our podcast.
Old. The joke is getting old. We've said that too many times. And you know, I don't know about you, but I haven't gotten a single damn penny yet.
But I'm saying 50,000. No. You think that's too much? Okay.
Well, you know, and speaking of that, we were talking about Bitcoin. The other week, there was some guy who, you know how they have like the Today Show and all these, they show the crowd scene behind them.
Yes,
I forget which show it was, but some guy, held up a sign with, his Bitcoin ID and said, "Hey, mom, send Bitcoin." And he got $50,000 worth of Bitcoins.
Okay, so what the hell? So you're shooting my ID. I mean, what the hell? I mean, give me a break.
Just for random people saying, okay, I'll send them a little bit.
Okay, I mean, come on.
Yeah, he was on the Today Show or something.
Could you give your
we've
Bitcoin
got like
account?
20
okay,
listeners
well, could
max.
You, okay, oh, we don't have that many people?
Not usually.
Oh.
For those of you out here listening, you're wondering, when I do the stats, it's around 20 plus or minus some usually. Like sometimes we spike up into the 40s or 50s, but that's rare. Sometimes we spike down to 10.
Sometimes we've had, it's like,
And of course, I'm restricting, I who knows what the real numbers are, because I can't tell whether the people listen to the whole show or just a couple seconds, and I'm restricting a lot of things that look like they're probably robots, but who knows, some of those might be real people too. I don't know, but anyway.
Who knows? Anyway, it's being downloaded. We hope you're listening, and you hope you're enjoying.
We enjoy, the regular listeners, we really appreciate you. We're obviously not doing this to get hundreds and hundreds of people listening.
Definitely. Yeah, we're not doing.
We do this because we have fun.
Yeah, we're not doing it to get rich. That's for sure.
Anyway, but the point is, there are all kinds of additional business models that are out there and made available by the technology for audio, for video, for print, for all of this stuff, and you're starting to see that breakthrough and bear some fruit, but the interesting part is, does it all get co-opted again and still be fundamentally all the gatekeepers come back in place? Because, like, for instance, what you saw with blogs,
yeah,
and for that matter podcasts,
yeah,
a number of years ago, like if you go back 10 years, almost all of the quote-unquote big blogs were individuals who were writing at their desks at home. They had some other day job and they were writing at home, and those were the big popular blogs, and then they all got bought up, and now you have like all the big blogs at this point are associated with magazines or newspapers or various other or TV stations or whatever, and you don't really have the amongst the big guy, I mean, tons and tons of people still have individual blogs, but the big guys are now all corporate backed. They're all covered with advertising, and their various companies running them as for-profit businesses. The little guys aren't like in the top 10, 20 blogs anymore, And the same thing with podcasts. If you go look at iTunes top podcasts, once upon a time, you had more individuals in that listing. Now, it's all, you've got a few blogging networks like Twit and Nerdist and a few other places like that. But then you've got like the Discovery Channel and PBS and NPR and BBC and all these big companies that are now making their content available through these means as well as their traditional means, and that's what dominates there. And And you still see that clearly, like music, books, etc. That's still very much the case there, and video for that matter. But it gives the opportunity. The opportunity does exist for the little guys to break through. But I think we're still living in the world that if a little guy does succeed in breaking through, he gets bought out.
You could become the big guy. Listen, I just saw you said that you bought that Mega Millions ticket. As a matter of fact, I just saw one thing over here where they said that the jackpot could reach $1 billion.
I could live billion, with
$1 billion lottery jackpot. Damn. Now that's a jackpot.
Yeah, it'll get split 10 ways, though. Because whenever it gets this high, so many people buy in, you get
multiple
winners.
Well, they were actually showing how recently the really big one that was the Powerball one that was won in Florida, one person won it, $500 million.
There you go.
So, you know, yeah. So that would be crazy. One jackpot, $1 billion. Wow. Well, anyway. All right. So we're, you know what, guys, we're done.
We're done.
Yep.
Thanks, everybody, again. We'll talk to you next week. You know how to get in touch with us. You know you should share us and tell your friends. So that's it. Have a good week, every day. And by the way, I should mention as well, you know, if we follow the same schedule we did last year, we'll have one more regular show. And then the show after that will be a review of our predictions from a year earlier.
Oh, crap. That's right.
And then the show after that will be our new predictions for 2014.
That's correct.
So, you know, everybody, you know, you may want to take this opportunity to go back and listen to what we said a year ago. And so just the dates, the 2013 prediction show was the one we recorded on January 8th. And I believe we published it on January 12th. So go back, listen. See how we're doing, and then we'll check
what's
in for ourselves in a couple weeks.
You know what's in there?
I don't know what's in there, Yvonne. You're not Yvonne. You're Alex. Is that milk?
Taste it.
Okay. Well, I'm actually saying goodbye to everybody right now. You want to help say goodbye?
Bye bye.
Okay. With that, goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
No, you should bye. Say bye bye.
Oh, I should say bye bye instead. Okay.
Bye bye.
Bye bye.